It's time once again to step out, step up, and step into the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons. Rick's expertise in the coming out process has helped hundreds of men and women ignite their inner desires to powerfully step out of the closet and into the light of living authentically as gays and lesbians. Freeing you from the feelings of guilt or shame, Rick offers take action tips for basking in the glow of self-love, easy to implement tools for wrapping yourself up in the warm embrace of self-acceptance, and take it to the bank advice on how to step courageously into a powerful, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Each week, the Coming Out Lounge brings you heartwarming coming out stories, insights for living authentically as a gay or lesbian, and challenges you to step out of the ordinary and into your extraordinary life. Pull up a chair, cuddle up with the truth of who you've always been, and let's spend an hour in the Coming Out Lounge discovering how to energetically step out, step up, and step into living your truth. Here's the host of your show, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your truth, even if you're questioning, is my husband gay, bi, or straight? Now, I'm going to let that question kind of sit there for a minute, because today we're really going to examine that question. In fact, if you're a straight woman who feels like your man's fooling around on the side, you know you don't like it. You don't like it one bit, and you sure don't like it when you find out it isn't happening with a woman. In fact, it's happening with another man. Now what the heck are you going to do? But let me tell you something. Before you go all brash and dramazilla on him, I want you to think about the real question. Just because he's screwing around with a guy, does that mean he's gay? Does it mean he's bi? Or is he still just straight and he's just exercising some of his masculine sexual energy? Do you see, the answer to this question, I've learned as I've done my work, it's not so cut and dried. And male sexuality really, truly can express itself in so many different ways. And it doesn't necessarily mean you guys need to head off to divorce court right out the gate. In fact, if anything, I want to encourage you and really encourage you to listen to what's going to happen with my guest today as we take deep breaths and we really begin to examine what's going on with your man. And my guest today is here to help us really unravel these questions. He's Joe Court, and he's a certified Imago relationship therapist. He's got a PhD, he's got an MSW, he's got an MA, and he is a board certified clinical sexologist. So I know that's a lot of stuff, but let me tell you what this guy knows. He knows his sex stuff and he knows his gender stuff. He really can help us unravel this. And in today's conversation, we're going to set everything straight, no pun intended. We're going to take some advice from the pages of Joe's book, which ironically is entitled, Is My Husband Gay, Straight, or Bi? And we're going to really help guide some of you women to that place where you can really get some answers that you've really been looking for. And what you might find is it just might surprise you that your guy still really is into you as he's always been. He's just looking for some little bit of differences. And with that, I'm going to say welcome, Joe, to the show. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Hey, you bet, Joe. And, you know, I am so glad you're here because I think this conversation about where someone is in the spectrum of their sexuality is becoming more and more prudent in our society today because it's no longer just a gay-lesbian conversation. We've got conversations going on about transgender. We've got conversations going about gender fluid and gender variant and all these things. And of course, you and I are of the generation where, you know, if somebody says you're queer, we kind of take a little bit of offense to that. But now queer is almost like the really embracing word that people are using. So let's kind of just, from your perspective, Dr. Joe, let's kind of clear things up a little bit here. So is there really a solid definition of gay, bi, and heterosexual, or are all the lines really getting blurred these days?
I think that we fooled ourselves historically thinking there were just this, just binary, right, gay and straight, and bisexuals were completely erased, and, you know, they started voicing their opinion and asserting themselves, and I really feel like these words don't describe people. They're too limiting. People are more fluid. We know this about women. Now we know this about men, and so I think as an identity and as to talk in with some clarity. There might be some ease at using this language, but I don't think it really fits for most people.
I don't think it does either. And something you just said really drives that point home. We, for some reason as a society, we have taken this that, okay, we get this about women. Women can be fluid. They can do this thing. And I think that's kind of a masculine dominated perspective. But now the real conversation is, okay, we're starting to give men a little bit of permission to be a little bit fluid in their sexuality. Is that what you're finding out in your practice?
Yes. And it's really, it's permission, like you say, but it's also they're giving themselves permission on the internet, doing it anonymously. And the only reason they're coming out is their wives are catching them or people are catching them online.
This is probably the truest thing yet, and I know we're only a couple of minutes into the show, but this is the truth that most people are getting exposed because they're getting caught. But if we could change this dynamic, if we could really begin to have honest conversations, and those of you that are listening that may have questions about this, I truly encourage you to pick up Joe's book because he's got some beautiful case studies throughout the entire book that talk about this. But if we were having honest conversations about our desires, what we would enjoy sexually, what might begin to change in our world, Joe?
I think people would start to realize that it's more complicated and not so simple, and people have to deal with the fact that they have feelings around this, that they can't make sense out of it because what people think about sexually, what they like sexually, is completely often very different than what they're portraying in their life. And people have a really hard time with that.
Well, and I think that's the key, is what they think about is almost like taboo. But what
yes.
they do is the pretending to be, which in reality,
yeah.
if they were really doing what they thought, I don't know, is it be that shocking, except that it would be shocking because society's not ready for it, quote unquote, not ready for it.
Right. They just did a study, I think it's really interesting, about how, and this is off topic, but it really relates, how women, we always think women wouldn't have casual sex and men are more likely to have opportunistic casual sex. And this researcher in the UK said, wait a minute, there's probably reasons because of safety, because of slut shaming. And so she did this research and made it safe for women to be able to be as easily accepting of casual sex than men. And when she created safety, they found that women are just as much likely to okay and agree to casual sex than men. And it all comes down to like slut shaming, gay shaming, and safety. It is not safe for straight men or men who are not gay to come out because once they do, they're labeled, they're shamed, and they're rejected.
You know, this is interesting because I have a good girlfriend that, not like sexual girlfriend, like girlfriend, hey, she's my girl. We go and we do coffee drinks and all that stuff together. And she has just met a younger guy. And I mean, literally a younger guy, probably 15, 20 years her junior. And she's really enjoying going out with him. And she actually said to me, oh my God, the sex is really great, but I don't know if I should be doing this. And I said to her, really? Why shouldn't you be doing this? What is telling you you shouldn't be doing this? Well, you know, what will other people think? I'm like, who cares what other people think? If this is something that's bringing you happiness, joy, it's fulfilling that sexual desire, maybe it's even fulfilling some emotional desire, which I actually believe is more of it than the sex piece of it, except she says, you know, the sex is really great. I'm all, yeah, he's like a yoga instructor and 20 years younger than you. I can imagine what that'd be like. You know, it's got to be really, really hot. But this taboo umbrella that hangs over all of us about, ooh, sex is this nasty little thing we shouldn't talk about, is probably the biggest thing that keeps all of us from owning up and saying, yes, this is what I'd like. And I'm sure you get this all the time in your practice, don't you?
All the time.
Yeah.
And they feel safe in my office to be able to say it, but not out in the world.
Right. So what do you think could be the thing that would start to make people feel safe, not to the whole world, but start to feel safe talking about this in their own little nucleus of a world to maybe help them come out, so to speak?
That's a good question. I don't know. I know that I help them and start with these men by talking to them in therapy, but what happens is they repeatedly, all of them, no matter where they are around the world, because I do Skype and I do long distance, right, and so they're all over. They all say the same thing. If I tell my wife, she'll think I'm gay. There's no way out of it. If I tell my wife I'm bi, and, you know, bisexual men have a great, much greater chance of staying married than gay men because they are attracted to women. They continue to stay attracted to their wives, but women have a hard time accepting that, and they reject them, so they choose not to tell.
So that's interesting, but not surprising. I'm not surprised that the bisexual men have a higher chance of staying together. But in the case of somebody I just interviewed, his story is he knows he's gay. And this isn't one of those guys that's like, I know I'm gay because I'm really attracted to guys, but I've never done anything. Okay, he has had his experiences. But he also knows he's very emotionally attached to his wife, and he's not willing to let go of that piece, yet he really enjoys his man-on-man action, but he's not really ready to walk away from the relationship, and he has a couple of kids as well. So given, and I know this is a loaded question, Joe, but given what I just kind of described, do you think he's more gay? Do you think he's just experiencing some stuff, going out there and doing it, or is he trying to figure it out?
Good question. That's what's so hard. I often think how rich I would be if I could be the gay whisperer, you know,
right,
to be able to tell.
You and me both. You know? If we could put that together, you and I, you know, we're the gay whisperers. We'll go fly all over the world and do this. I think both of our husbands would be like, yeah, go do it, because, you know, we're going to be really wealthy guys when you guys pass on. So, you know, hey. But it is an interesting question, isn't it? Because who has that answer?
I know. The answer lies within the man. And it really is working specifically and individually with him and for the wife. And like you said, you know, they get very reactive, understandably, very upset. They're very overwhelmed and confused, and then they can't listen. And really the work is helping her calm herself, self-regulate, and realize this doesn't have to mean, like you started this show, it doesn't have to mean he's going to leave her, that he's gay, that he's acting on it, but can we really just sit with him and hear his story and not project ours?
You know, and I get this a lot because, as most of the listeners who've been listening to my podcast for a while know, I came out very, well, I shouldn't say very late in life. I came out late in life, 38 years old. And the big question mark that always hangs over my head when people hear that is, okay, so you had kids and you were able to do this, and, you know, now here you are and you're with this guy. Yeah, because it's not as black and white. We can't put this into a lovely little, you know, wrapped up box that says, yeah, this is how this works. I mean, this is why there's 50 shades of gray plus in the whole sexuality spectrum. So I think the thing that I'm learning as I'm working with people coming out of the closet is you may not want to jump so quickly to this is who I am, just because the world wants you to step into a box predefined by them. And I think that's kind of what you're saying is we become a society that in order to make everyone else feel comfortable, and what I'm about to say, I could probably get some real hate mail for, everyone else wants to feel comfortable so we can say, okay, that's okay that you're gay, which we know there's a lot of people who still don't get that, or that's okay that you're bisexual, or that's okay that you're this heterosexual. As long as we can put you in a box, then we can at least try to process this. But the moment that you don't fit exactly into one of those boxes, it becomes very confusing for the average Joe and Jill. Because, wait, okay, so you're gay, you're going to stay with your wife, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure this is part of where you step in and go, okay, let's sort this out with your clients, correct?
Yes, that's exactly what I do. I try to help them understand all the, you know, I have several questions I ask them, we go through it. And even with these questions, even at the end, they still may not know. The biggest and hardest struggle for a lot of men is when they're just fluid and there's nowhere to land. And there's no community, there's no place for them. It's the hardest place to be.
So define fluid.
So fluid would be that they are attracted to both men and women in different ways and would be sexual with men and women in different circumstances, under different reasons, and for different set of circumstances. And a lot of people would say, well, isn't that bisexual? And what I've come to understand is it's up to the person to identify whether that's bisexual or not. I think it would be great to be able to say, well, yeah, that's bisexual. Then we can, again, like you just said, it's nice and neat, it's organized, and we can move on. But some people don't identify as bisexual. They might just have sexual fantasies for men, but romantic and sexual fantasies for women. They might not have any sexual fantasies toward men, but they like sex with men. What's that? Is that bisexual? Isn't that bisexual? It is not for anyone other than that person to decide for themselves, and that's where people have a hard time.
Well, and I also think the piece that you just brought up about they may just have sex with men, and again, I'm going to generalize, and here comes some more hate mail. Okay, us guys tend to be much more sexual animals, so to speak, although I have a lot of girlfriends. I'm like, really? You are doing it that often? You are just kind of a crazy girl. But I think sometimes it's just that experience, that release, and that's another shade of gray there. There can be people who are like, and I'm not necessarily saying sexually addicted. There's a vibe of I'm just really high sexual energy. And I actually have a client right now who is 62 years old and just came out, and he's been pent up for all these years, and you and I have talked about this in the past when we've been offline. A lot of times when you've just come out, yeah, that sexual energy is going to be going through the roof, because now it's like, let's go experiment. So let's go play. We're the kid in the candy store. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to sustain. And this is why I think this conversation is so important, is there are so many variances into this conversation of, are you gay? Are you straight? Are you bi? What are you attracted to when? What's the trigger? I know I've worked with people who the trigger is, I just really emotionally attached. I attached to this guy. And I'm really surprised that where it led to was sex. I never would have thought myself having sex with a man, but I'm really emotionally attached. And this is beyond the bromance that, we all hear about between guys. It's something more. So when you're talking these guys through it, and then I'll give my perspective too, what is the thing they're most fearful of if they finally do go confront their spouse about having these desires to be with men? What are they most scared of?
Loss, divorce, both are. Both go right into this marriage isn't going to work, because our culture says if he's gay or if he looks gay or sounds gay or, acts gay, the marriage can't work. And those are the myths that I think we're challenging as coaches and therapists, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, the myth that just because you have gay sex doesn't make you gay. And just because you're gay, let's say, that has to end your marriage. It's not true. They're both false.
Right. And I would take this to a space of in most relationships, okay? And I'm putting the big umbrella over this, folks. So most relationships, I think you'd be lying to me if you're having the same level and intimacy an amount of sex with your partner that you had when you first met when you're 10 years down the road. Everything shifts. So there's room for things to begin to shift. And there's also room to suddenly go, I really used to like to do it this way. Now I'm enjoying it more this way. To me, this is just another extension of those conversations. It may be that where this generated from may come from some other experience he or she has had, but it may be he had some experience where, and I'll just use like the epitome of the generalization of he's in the locker room and suddenly, he sees a guy, and for whatever reason, suddenly that testosterone look that he sees that guy half naked or completely naked, he looks at him and suddenly something shocks his testosterone and he finds himself attracted to that guy. The question is then, is he really gay? I say, we don't know. What do you think, Joe?
We don't know.
Exactly. Because there's nothing to found that on.
No, there's not. It feels good to think you know, and our culture is so reductionist and simplistic. And when I talk to people, I've actually was at a party once, and I was talking about this work and my book, and they were like, I said, so what do you call when women have sex with women? We don't label them gay. What do you call that? And the guy at the party said, I call that college. Right, so there's like room, there's permission. Girls can be a tomboy and not be lesbian. Boys can't be sissies without being a faggot. It's like, it's the same concept as slut shaming.
Right. And, what you just said reminded me of something that I'm having a lot of conversations with my transgender friends that I speak on a lot of panels with, you know, the immediate assumption is if you're transgender, then the gender that you move to means that you were attracted to that same gender. I'm like, no, 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 you folks are confusing all of this. Just because they went from male to female or female to male, if they went from female to male, doesn't necessarily mean that they're male and attracted to males. It could mean that they have always been a heterosexual male trapped inside a female body, but they've always been attracted to females. So in essence, they are a heterosexual male attracted to females, just trapped in the wrong outer coverings. That's it. It's that simple.
Yep.
So
I think Bruce Jenner is going to make sense of all that.
I do too, and there's been a lot of conversations going on about that. It's like, I love that this conversation is going on, and in fact, when I spoke at universities this past week, it was really empowering to be in that energy, because now the conversations are shifting to the bigger picture. Okay, so we kind of get sexual orientation, but now help us understand this, you know, gender identity, the sexual identity sort of stuff, so we can really begin to get it. And it's also very confusing, so I feel blessed to get to go have those conversations with people. So I want to talk a little bit about some stuff in the book, because there's something you mentioned about the beach test in guys, and I found that really interesting in the book. So I think it would help, what's this beach test thing you talk about? You know, your man's on the beach, what is really going on there?
You know, I just use it as a constellation of questions. So just the idea, to simplify it, when you're on a beach, do you find yourself attracted and your eyes, even against your own will, drawn to men, women, or both? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can usually answer, men will, and it's really, it's more men that can answer this than women. Men will say, oh, well, I mean, like for me, I always joke, as a gay man, the women are in the way. You know, I'm trying to look at the men.
Right.
And a lot of gay men will say, well, I notice beautiful women, like you kind of said when you started this. Yeah, you can appreciate, I'm not talking about appreciating a beautiful woman. Do you want to have sex with her? Do you want to fuck her? Do you want to, eat her out? Is there that raw kind of sexual drive? That's what I mean about the beach test.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is something that as men, and I'm going to say as men become comfortable in their sexuality, which isn't really what I mean, is when men become comfortable being themselves in society. It's not about their sexuality, because I think a lot of guys are actually probably more comfortable in their sexuality than they would admit. It's if they get comfortable in society saying, yeah, I looked at that guy and I liked it. Yeah, I looked at that guy and go, God, he's ripped. I wish I looked like that. And God, if I look like that, I might even want to play with that. I think there's a lot more of these conversations going on in the male mind than anybody's talking about. In fact, you and I both know, if you were to go on any of the quote gay male apps, Scruff, Grindr, Growler, you go on to Craigslist and you see the, you know, discreet or the down lows, my ventured guess would be 90% of those guys are probably quote unquote straight guys looking for some outside action with a guy, but they don't truly self-identify as necessarily gay.
And they wouldn't. The word that they would use that is even, you know, the Urban Dictionary is sort of the mark of what people are self-identifying as. They call themselves heteroflexible. And I think there's a cultural war going on with words, because these words don't fully describe the experience. But somebody can be homoflexible, where they're mostly homosexual, but every once in a while the right woman comes around and they can be flexible. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I think of as fluidity.
Right. And, you know, this is interesting. About 2 months ago, a high school friend of mine and I just happened to cross paths through the wonderful world of Facebook. And we hadn't seen each other since literally we were in high school. And he lives here in Southern California in West Hollywood. And so I went and met him for dinner. And we had this exact conversation, because he actually got married in college for a brief time and then got divorced from the woman that he was married to. Obviously, my story is I was married for quite a few years, 13 years, and then got divorced. But he's in the same space. He goes, you know, I'm not one of those gay men. And he goes, maybe it makes me less gay. And he goes, quite honestly, I've actually been accused of being less gay because of this. He goes, I'm not one of those men that said, no vagina, ain't going to happen. He goes, because quite honestly, in certain situations, I might make it happen. But he goes, what I'm really attracted to is men and their pecs and their biceps and their backs and their ass and their penises. That's what I'm really attracted to. But I become flexible when a certain woman with the right chemistry and the right intimacy and the right conversation, he goes, why not? What is it hurting? It's not defining me. It doesn't say this is who I am for life. And I think that's where we as society get very hooked up in that definition. You have to be this to make me feel comfortable.
And I do think it came from a place of the politics of coming out gay, making a place for the politics, really. So we were rigidly holding on to that identity. And there's so many gay men that are just like that guy you described, that have sexual feelings over time, over a lifetime, and if they allowed themselves toward women. Mm-hmm. But because there was such a stronghold on, don't take this away from me, stop taking my rights away, that generation, you, me, that was a rigid stance. The younger generation, they don't need that stance. Things have changed too much for them.
No, they have changed too much. And in fact, as my own daughters have come through the growth of being in their teens, and my youngest one is still in her teens, and my oldest just turned 20, it's been a very interesting conversation. In fact, my oldest one said to me her freshman year in high school, when I discovered she was dating a girl, it really isn't about the gender, it's about who I enjoy spending time with and who I feel like I love. And that was my own first homophobic moment to really go, okay, this is really flipping me out. But it was flipping me out for all the wrong reasons, because I was more concerned about everybody who'd said to me, oh, you're going to ruin those girls' lives. Then when my youngest one came to me and said, well, you know, I'm bisexual, I kind of had to have another moment. And like, okay, well, how does that work? How do I see that? But then when I stepped into my own feelings of who I am, and I know I am predominantly gay. If I put me on the Kinsey scale, I lean really close to that male side of what I'm attracted to. But as I started to have conversations with her and really dig into this, yeah, she's a little young, but I'm going, okay, let's go with this. If this is what you're feeling right now, let's go with it. But what's so fascinating with the younger generation is they are more about connecting with the person, not the gender. And
yes,
I think our generation is still caught in that space of, okay, heterosexual is this, gay is this, lesbian is this, bisexual is this, transgender, they're still trying to figure that out because they can't wrap their heads around it, but we have to have the box. And I think this new generation of warriors and, you know, flag bearers and people who are going to step us through into what sexuality really looks like is going to be the generation that says, let's quit having this discussion. Let's just be who we are and who we love. And it may change and it may be something different, but it's our generation and our parents' generation, and maybe a little bit of people younger than you and I, but not too much younger. We're going to have to get out of the way so this whole thing can begin to transition into a really open, embracing, non-conversation sort of thing.
Yes. I think we're going to have no choice but to get out of the way. They're moving forward.
Well, they are moving forward. And they're not standing for any of this crap that, you know, is being said. You know, they're not even really taking the religious conversation anymore. They're like, okay, well, that's old news. We've heard that enough. We're just saying, here's the deal. I like this. I like this kind of person. And that may be who I like for now. And then maybe one day I go, oh, no, I think I'd like this. But I think it's more about, do we really have to keep having this conversation?
I really think the internet is, and the social media and people being able to get online and explore freely without judgment, anonymously, is freeing people more than our generation, where we didn't have that. We had to go out and risk that we would be seen and discovered.
Yeah. So as a professional in this field and a sexologist and all that stuff that you do, Joe, one of the things that I have just recently started talking about is my own experience of being sexually abused. And when I bring that up in forums or on stage, I always get the questions, well, isn't that then what made you gay? I would love your perspective on how true that really is. And I know it's individual, so I'm going to caveat that statement right there. It could be something, but is it the sexual abuse that really could turn someone gay if they were abused by someone of the same sex?
To me, this is easy. Sexual abuse does not orient you, it disorients you. I always use that line. It does not create a sexual orientation. It confuses, it clouds, it can shape behavior. So if a saint, a male priest, rabbi, older father, whatever, older male sexually abuses a younger male, that boy will grow up into adulthood and can reenact the sexual abuse with other men. It doesn't make them gay. It's a behavior. It's a trauma reenactment. It's a disorientation, not about orientation, period.
Love that. I love that because that's my stance. And in fact, when I, and I think I've shared this before in recent weeks, because I've just begun to talk about this because it's like the next frontier for me to actually be able to really just say, okay, this happened. But this didn't happen, and it made me ashamed of being gay. This thing happened, and what it makes me upset about is that person had no right to take that experience away from me until I was ready to have the experience. However, that being said, as it happened, it actually validated, again, folks, validated what I knew in my heart, that I was actually attracted to men, and I was, even at that very young age, able to, in my own 7 and 8 year old mind, get, yeah, this is what I'm supposed to be. This is how I'm supposed to be. Now the confusion's starting to go away. What wasn't right is what that person did to me that took me away from being able to have this experience in the right time frame when I was ready to really embrace it. However, I also embraced the fact that because that happened, it probably happened for me so that I could go through the rest of my experiences to land where I am today, doing what I do, being who I am, and standing in my truth the way I'm meant to be standing at this current point in my life.
That's very well said.
And I think it is. Go ahead, John.
Well, it is common for people to say, well, if you were abused, how do you know that didn't make you gay? But nobody says, how do you know that sexual abuse didn't make you straight? That's how you know that there's a pre-undercurrent judgment going on there, that they've already decided that gay is pathological and that you don't develop into homosexuality. It's like a problem that is created.
Yeah, yeah. It's very true, and I love that. That's going to be one of our tweets out of this program here. So I have a couple last questions here before we wrap everything up. So a wife and a husband are working together with you, as I've done a little bit of that work. I kind of stay away from it because I feel like that kind of gets into some messy territory where a therapist is actually much better at doing that work. In fact, I actually encourage my clients to go work with a therapist as the relationship, once we've determined that's what's going to happen, that the relationship is going to unravel. I believe therapy and marriage and family counselors is a powerful space for a couple to go work through if they can make that happen. Sometimes they can't make it happen, but I think it's important to help unravel that. But if you're working with a wife and a husband and you get to that juncture where you realize, okay, he is, and this isn't going to work, what kind of encouragement and advice can you give to the spouse, and I'm going to say the wife, because we're kind of talking about the men thing here, to really be able to move herself forward?
You know, I strongly recommend that she get into her own individual therapy, and I always recommend the straight spouse networks. The problem with the straight spouse networks, most every time I refer to them, the women come back to me and say they're flooded with very angry women who are anti- they're against the husband and what they did, and they're all about the cheating, and they're all about being victims, and there absolutely is a healthy response to, you know, infidelity, a healthy response to being cheated on, and it does victimize. But the problem is so many of these women and many of the therapists that support the Straight Spouse Network, you know, sort of freeze these women in a victim stance. And the women come back to me and say, that's not where I want to be. I want a place where we can still love our husbands, we can still love ourselves, and we can find a middle ground. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not bashing Straight Spouse Network. I love it. I think it means well. I think they have to find the right chapter.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is the piece where you got to find what really, truly works for you. And there are ways to make this really become a supportive thing if you choose to open your eyes and go in with the eyes wide open. It isn't easy. And, you know, when you were talking about the infidelity and stuff being the real big trigger, I would have to say in the 6 years that I've been doing this work, coaching people through the closet doors, I can only think of one experience where a wife was more pissed off because the husband was gay than she was pissed off because of the infidelity.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like 99.99% of the time, it's the infidelity that hurts more. And I always attribute it to this. Women are very mothering, very family driven, very trusting. And I know I'm generalizing right now, but this is how they function. This is what they're built upon. And when that gets put to the test, it is like mother, you know, the mother hen gets her tail feathers ruffled, as they should. And it's that you're taking away something that I thought I could help hold together. You took the thing away that I thought was to be true when you said those words to me. And now you prove that I was incapable of making that happen, that I was blind to what was going on, all that stuff. It isn't the reason that it happened. It isn't because he was quote unquote gay or exploring. It's that you went and you explored. And I've often encouraged guys that are kind of in the beginning stage who have never explored to not explore until they fess up. Because I've seen it work much better with, okay, this is how I know I feel. And as hard as it may be for you to believe I haven't done anything, I truly have not done anything. But I've been holding this in for so long. And rather than go experience it to confirm what's going on, I can't live with myself if I go cheat on you and if I'm dishonest. Yes, I'm being somewhat dishonest because I know this is going on in my head and we went ahead and got married. But I think our generation and the generation above us, this was kind of how we were meant to go do this. You have to go do the married thing if you're questioning, see if this will cure you. I think where we're at now in this whole conversation, the next generation and the generation of my children and the next children coming up, I literally hope to God that doesn't become the conversation that continues. Well, go get married and that'll take it away, because that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to happen.
I hope that conversation's gone.
I do too. I really do. So if a husband starts to feel like, okay, he knows this thing is going south, what would be one of the things you could really encourage him to do to try to really make this, and I hate to say make this right, but to really move this thing forward in the most positive way with his wife? And I know that depends on whether she's willing to let it kind of move forward, but what are some things guys can do when they know, okay, I am going to really step out and say, I'm gay? How do you do this in the best way?
That's a really good question. I mean, you know, the first thing is I really help prepare him. A lot of men think, well, we have gay friends. My wife's gay friendly. She's going to be fine. And I always have to remind them, you have to remember, that's not a gay husband. This is a whole different ballgame for her now. She's going to feel lied to. She was lied to in many
Absolutely.
Ways. So I really prepare him for her reaction. I prepare him for her rejection. And I ask him to really find a way to get his own support away from her and not be dependent on her to support him, but to be there for her. Hear her, be there for her, and work with her, but still hang on to what he wants. And that's really, really hard because of the fighting that ends up happening, and both feel antagonized. So I don't know that there's a really good way. I mean, there's nothing good about it. Once he tells her, there's so much animosity and so much emotionality that I tell them to find a way to hold on to themselves. But then when she does come down, and she will, for them to be able to say, how are we going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different ways that people are exploring these days, just like open marriages.
Right. Right. Well, and one of the things I often encourage my guys to go through as they start to really explore this is, how would you like to be treated on the other side? If you were her, how would you like to be treated?
That's good.
Because if you can put yourself, and I know we can't ever put ourselves in somebody else's shoes 100%, but if you can imagine just for a moment the fear, the confusion, the hurt, the loss, the who's ever going to want to touch me again now that I'm a woman who was married to a gay guy. How can you be most supportive? And I agree with you 100%. Go find your own support somewhere completely away, because mixing it together isn't going to work. I remember when I went through it, we were both using the same exact therapist and it didn't end up working. It worked for unraveling the relationship, but it didn't work for either one of us moving forward. It worked for me moving forward because after the fact that my wife decided she wasn't going to use that therapist and I decided to continue to move forward, I knew there was something about her that was just really, really working for me. And finally, it came to light that she had been through the experience herself. Her husband had come out of the closet. And so she was living and breathing this and seeing it without overstepping the professional boundaries. And she was able to relate to the whole entire experience. And I think when you find the person you can work with, and your ex or your wife or however you want to, you know, whatever label we want to put on it, can find the person that they can work with, then you're both getting the support in the great way that you need it for you. Now, sometimes that can add additional conflict, because then maybe somebody's therapist is saying this and the other one's saying this, and then that can contribute to it. But I think when you can both do it and be on your own paths, a lot of times you can move quicker, not quickly, but a little bit quicker through this whole thing. So
yes, it's so hard. There's such an inability to make a set of rules, because every couple is so different, and it's so really, it's the most one of the most heartbreaking cases I work with are mixed orientation marriages, because they still love each other. They're best friends. They could have lived the rest of their lives together, and they usually have great marriages. This is the only thing that pulls them apart, and it's a big thing.
It is a big thing. It's a huge thing. But if you give yourself the space to acknowledge we still really care about each other, and in the cases where there's children that you share together, that's not going to go away. Those kids are not going to go away. The relationship that you share with those children isn't going to go away. Yes, you can take it away, and then that's when it gets really ugly. But if you can keep your head on and realize this is still a family unit, there's nothing that can really change it unless you choose to change it, and keep that focus, which is what I did. We got really focused on the kids and on respecting one another and knowing that, okay, what happened just wasn't the right fit, but we are going to respect each other and we're going to move forward. So as we start to wind this up, Joe, first of all, I really appreciate you being here, and I always enjoy our conversations, and I always enjoy that after we do something together, we both get lots of hate mail, so we're already preparing for that, but we'll deal with that as we always do. But this is the Coming Out Lounge, and I know you've given some great advice. If you could really talk to the person who's struggling right now, going, man, I really know I need to open up, I need to talk about this, but I'm just really petrified, what would you say to them?
I would say really arm themselves with the most support and the most reading, and really get as clear as possible about who they are first before starting to share this with people they love. Mm. Because just like anybody coming out, if you don't do that, you're going to lose your balance, and you're not going to be able to stay strong in the face of the kind of rejection you're going to get from the people you tell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, so before we sign off, so the book is My Husband Gay, Straight or Bi? And what's your website, Joe?
It's my name, Joe Court, JoeKort.com.
Excellent. And for those of you listening, all that information will be up on the show page for this podcast. And if you've enjoyed anything that Joe and I have shared with you, or you found something of interest or supportive to you, we'd really appreciate it if you'd hop over to iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of those places you might be finding the Coming Out Lounge. And if it feels right for you, give us a rating and review. You know, give us some insight of what you learned, what you thought was helpful, things that you thought might help you move down this pathway. And as always, if you are interested, you can hop into Facebook to the Coming Out Coach page and become part of my family over there. And of course, we love our Twitter family. They're the best, because they can say what they need to in 140 characters or less. So if you want to hop into Twitter and give us some love, it's at Rick Clemens, and the hashtag for the show is the Coming Out Lounge. And with that, I want to say, continue to go out there, and as Joe said, really discover who you are first in any aspect of life. Really get clear about that, whether you're coming out of the closet as gay, bi, transgender. Really get down to who you are. And it doesn't have to be anything even about sexuality. If you're trying to figure out what your next big career move is or whether you should be in that relationship, if things are showing up, there's probably a good chance that you're still trying to figure out who you are so that you can be better who you are in those situations. And with that, we're going to wrap up this episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And as always, I want to encourage you to go out there and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm your host, Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach. This is the Coming Out Lounge. And we will talk to you real soon in just about another week. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for joining us today with the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemons. Make sure you tune in with us next week, same time, same place, for the Coming Out Lounge.